Hello and welcome to Greenwich Pantry. This is the Greenwich Pantry podcast, Life is for Cooking. And how are you today? I hope you're well. I hope you're enjoying whatever you've been cooking all week. And I hope you're enjoying sharing it with yourself and whoever you live with. And well, it's great to have you on the show today. I'm really delighted to have as my guest today, Sophia. Sophia and I are going to be chatting about women and their role in the family and in the ways that cooking shapes the lives of our children as they become adults. Not only cooking, but how children relate to food in general. And I am very happy to have Sophia on board today.
Hi, I'm Sophia and I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
So this month has been a very interesting month for many women. It is the month that we are supposed to be celebrating the achievements of women.
Yes.
And isn't it ironic that so many things have pointed to the, I suppose, disenfranchising of what women do in society?
Yeah, I mean, can you just explain what you mean about that?
Well, we started off with International Women's Day when we were supposed to be celebrating all the great achievements of women. And, you know, that achievement extends to many areas of life. Mm-hmm. You know, we have women who have been the first pilots. We have women who have been the first to be entrepreneurs in business. Mm-hmm. And yet we have women, everyday women, whose contribution sometimes gets overlooked because it may be considered as menial work. But it's actually work that builds into the future.
Absolutely.
You know, it's kind
yeah.
of like a legacy that children get left with as they grow up, and something they can refer to. And by that I mean the work that women do with teaching children about food. And I'm not saying that men don't do it too, mm-hmm. but I think on the whole it's been the responsibility of the women over centuries to do that.
Yeah, I it's really interesting because I came across an article in the Telegraph that was totaling up what would cost when you evaluate all the chores, the cooking, the running of the home, the management that women do, and, you know, trying to shine light on how so undervalued it is, but in this pandemic that we've been in, and just how many how much pressure there has been on women, especially if you're a working mother, and it really is undervalued. And I think as a woman personally, I have to kind of push myself down every day and, you know, rethink the stigma that sometimes goes with, you know, spending so much time in the kitchen and doing all the stuff that needs to be done in a home. If that makes sense. It's kind of like I know that there's value in it, but the outside world doesn't always see that. You know, it's like it's more, you know, you've got this move now towards sort of getting, you know, a cleaner in, or you know, getting someone else to do the cooking for you, but it's not always everyone's reality. I've personally tried to embrace it and trying to be proud of, you know, the drudgery sometimes, but, you know, the value that I know that my kids are getting. And sometimes, you know, it's a battle, because it's like, you know, is this something that I don't want them to think that this is just a woman's role? But it is an important role that I try to just, let them understand that it is an important role, but it's not just a woman's role.
Yeah,
Yeah.
precisely.
Yeah.
And when you think about it in terms of the outcomes, you do understand that it makes a big impact on society as a whole. It may not seem like it's doing that, but it does make a big impact. And the reason I say that is because when children go to school, one of the first experiences that they have in the playground, or maybe even at the dinner table, is food envy, in a very mild form. So you may have a child who whose parent has cooked them or made them a delicious sandwich. And you may have another child who maybe doesn't know much about food, or maybe their parents don't know much about food, and has filled that plate with things that are maybe not so good for them. And it does make you feel that, the work that you do ultimately does have an impact, because we're building a society with little humans who will become big humans, and whose lives will be somehow impacted by the relationship they have with food. And when I talk about food envy, I don't mean it in a very sort of deep way. I just mean, wow, you're getting really, really good food, and actually I'm not. And what does that do for the child as the child grows up? And how does the child interrelate with the food choices that they make? It all adds up whichever way you look at
I
it.
agree.
And I think that, whichever way we look at it as individuals and as parents, that work that we do at home does have an impact somewhere.
Oh,
And we
yeah.
should be giving ourselves a pat on the back for that, and an encouragement to other people that we come in
Absolutely.
contact with.
Yeah, it's really interesting because this is a subject that I was talking to my 8-year-old daughter about recently. Just the choices that I make, that we make actually, for what goes into her lunchbox. And trying to mirror that at home, and it's been quite a challenge in lockdown to try and kind of keep her away from the store cupboard with the stash of treats that I've got in there. I make an effort that, with her lunchbox, not things like crisps and any sort of sweet thing, that's always a piece of fruit, a sandwich, or that's got enough vegetables in it, etc. And she acknowledges that, and I, talk around why I make those choices for her, because of nourishing, her brain and giving her energy, and she understands. So I use that as an example of why sometimes when we've been at home, I say, actually, you've just had breakfast, you don't need to have that biscuit. And yeah, that's been a conversation that we've had. The point that you made about the food envy at school, I'm very conscious of that. And as a class, I hope, as the children, especially now that they have to sit in their classroom and eat, when they open up their lunch boxes, there's a sort of education that's going on amongst them, and perhaps the children don't have parents that are putting sensible choices in their lunchbox can learn from observing the lunchbox, what's in the content of lunchboxes for their friends, and that they're sort of educating each other with what they're choosing to eat. So I know that with my daughter, for example, she's sometimes mentioned that, oh, you never put sweet things, you never put cakes and treats in my lunchbox. And I'm hoping that she will have confidence to be able to share with her friend the reason why, and perhaps that will have an influence on them, and they will sort of all be able to at some point make encourage their parents to put healthy options in their lunch boxes.
Yeah, and I think that really is one of the essential things to consider is the options, the fact that, you know, it's not about restricting your child from having a dessert or a fruit crumble or whatever they want to have. It's about making those options very, very clear to them and those reasons why certain options work better in a combination than they work. And I'll give you an example of a few years ago, I used to work on a program which was a parenting, a parent and child program. It's no, I don't believe that program is actually in operation anymore. There are similar things to it, but one time we had a discussion about children going to secondary school, and all the parents were in agreement that it's very easy for them to teach children about these food options at home up until the age of around 10. But when they are 10 years old and they're going to secondary school, most parents at that point kind of step back on a lot of things that they do for children. So they wouldn't necessarily be picking them up at school. They wouldn't necessarily be, you know, they wouldn't necessarily be picking them up after school. They wouldn't necessarily be to know who all their friends are because at secondary school they don't tend to have those meetups, you know, that they have at the primary school level. So they all felt that the challenge was when the child goes to school, everything they learned would be kind of swept away because they maybe are copying bad habits or habits that are not helpful to them, such as stopping on the way to go to a takeaway, which I think we don't have so much of a problem now because of the pandemic. But those were kinds of things that they were really concerned about. And I really empathized with that because it almost felt like at that moment, all the hard work had dissipated, and that the child then falls into a group of people who don't maybe don't care. But if we were all teaching the same things, then it wouldn't matter, would it? It wouldn't be such a huge problem. But I know we will never be that because that's not the way society works. But it's just, I guess it's a quite idealistic thought. But do you see what I mean by, you know, those the essentials are being laid down at family level, because ultimately, if the child knows those reasons, they can then say, well, actually, I don't know about you, but I'm not having that because blah blah blah. They wouldn't be saying, oh, I'm not having that because my mom says I can't have it. You know what I
Exactly.
mean?
I mean, yeah, it's knowing, as you said earlier on, reason behind the option, the understanding that actually, if I'm only eating biscuits, between, when I leave home and lunchtime, then, it's going to affect my concentration. That's going to give me a headache. I'm just going to be, feeling grumpy at the end of the day. And it's for them to be able to, think that, have I nourished myself today? Actually, the option is that I have a bowl of porridge. Like with my daughter, she's gone through the phase that you've explained where she's gone off to school, secondary school, and I've discovered that she's kind of living on chocolate bars, and then we go through her bag at the end of the day, and I'm thinking, what have you actually eaten? And I've got friends whose children, I think they use biometrics. I think it's called biometrics, where they, the payment system is through, I think, a thumbprint or something like that, and they get to see what the child has chosen. And I, this friend of mine warned me that, yes, you'll see that they only sort of bought a cookie or a cupcake, and then you can have those conversations with your children at the end of the day. That actually, I can see that you're not eating right. To the point you made, it is so important that we train our children to understand why, we're encouraging them to know about food, nutrition and what it does to their body, what it does to their mood, etc., and that they will be able to resist the temptation, which they will all go through when they're, with their peers, but hopefully they'll be able to influence their group, make better choices.
And so that kind of begs the question about us as the mums and the caregivers. Where do we find the time? How do we even structure our lives to make all of this happen? Because as you said at the start, there's a lot of pressure in so many different areas, let alone food. And that gets me thinking about how did our parents do it and what sort of help did they get? Maybe they didn't get the exact same type of help, but somehow they managed to give us some information about, what we should eat and what combines together as a balanced meal. What experiences have you had in that area?
Well, my mom was very strict about eating between meals. So once you had your meal, she didn't encourage that you ate in between meals. And our plate was always balanced in the sense of, there was protein, there were vegetables, it was healthy food. I probably spent most of my childhood overeating because my mom's food was so delicious. But because I was away from home quite a lot, because I was in boarding school, so I think a lot of what I learned about food was probably a lot more from being in school and being educated about food choices. I suppose school always sort of put a bit of vegetables and carbohydrates. So I think they were more, what's the word? There was more thought went into meals that I was eating at school than at home.
I think you're right. There are certain places where we pick up really good information. I mean, for children, they spend most of their life, I don't know, maybe more than a third of their time at school, as we as adults spend more than a third of our time at work. And those places, those are really important places for learning
I
and for
think that's
community.
yeah I think that's what I was trying to put across, that they I think more of my learning happened in that community of school than at home, because I was having more conversations, especially by the time I got into sixth form, where we were sort of more concerned about our figures and stuff, and that you got to understand actually that you can't wolf through a whole loaf of bread that they were giving us in the sixth form common room. And then we got a lot more conscious about our choices and
And actually, you touched on another point that is quite close to my heart as well, which is the sixth formers. So they were the ones that looked from afar like they had everything in control. But ultimately, you also, I'm sure that you must have come across some friends of yours with this, because I think everyone knows a friend who sadly went through anorexia or bulimia or some kind of self underconfident, and it tends to have a link with food. So we look up to them as, oh yeah, they kind of have everything in control. But then you find that the ones that don't tend to have those types of problems, they have kind of, I suppose, they have more control over what they eat, and they seem to be just happy people, and you know, they do the sports. I know it's just an observation. It's not perfect science that we're talking here, but you know, I found that a lot of people when I was growing up, they did have those control issues around that time of their life. And when you dig deep, you then find that, well, you know, what are you eating? Well, I'm trying not to eat this because I won't have a great figure.
Yeah.
But I don't consider the other aspect of food, which is that it's a nourishing thing, as we've been saying. So again, it's that understanding of what food does for you, you know, the importance of the food choices that come up again, isn't it, at that point of your life?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I was having this conversation with my 17-year-old daughter, and you know, she always says to me, "Oh, you know, Mum, when I have my kids, there's going to be no, you know, biscuits in the cupboard. The temptation is, you know, you're just opening up the temptation for, you know, for them." And I thought, oh, that's interesting, because she, you know, doesn't have the control, and I didn't have the control when I was growing up, because nobody talked to me about, you know, actually, you know what, two biscuits is enough. And then, because this is what you're doing to your body, overloading it with sugar, etc. I didn't have these conversations until, you know, as I said earlier on, I was in sixth form. So my daughter, she's discovering now, you know, understanding, control. What I find is the challenge is how you still enjoy food, you know, not kind of under the weight of like being restricted or having that experience of denial, but you know, reinforcing that actually you can have everything. It's all about balance and listening to your body, because there's certain things your body will speak to you when you've overdone it. And that's what I'm trying to do for my girls, and they're also sort of educating me, because I still have, you know, some of those issues of, you know, control and you know, just having a good understanding that about, you know, making the right choices for your body and the challenges that you're going to be facing for that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I really appreciate your time today. It feels like we need to have a part two to this conversation.
It's been really interesting, actually. Thank you.
It has. But one thing that is that's for sure is that we as women, you know, we do have a really important role to play in all of these things. And yes, it's a never-ending work, but it's very satisfying when you've gone through that whole journey and you look back and you see that you have raised children that not only you know, not only are they confident in what they're doing, but they're also open to learning.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's a really, really important phase of, or it's a really important part of what we do as mom. So I think we should give ourselves a pat on the back.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And you know, thankful for other moms who kind of share their tips, and you know, because I've certainly learned from other moms, you know, discussions about ideas to put in lunch boxes and how to deal with children that don't like vegetables, how to hide it in the food, etc. So we're all kind of like aiming for the same thing, which is to give our children, you know, set them up for a healthy future.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Sophia.
Thank you, Lara.
I would love to have you back.
Oh, well, I look forward
still
to
a
it.
Lot to talk about.
Definitely, you know, and thank you. Yeah.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed speaking to Sophia about the women's role in bringing up their children and educating them on food choices. If you want to be my guest on this podcast, please email info@greenwichpantry.com. Be delighted to speak to you on any topic that includes food and how it affects us as humans and cooking, what we love to eat and what we love to share with people in our lives. Well, I look forward to hearing from you, and until then, I want to wish you a very happy end of the month, and look forward to April, more sunshine, please, and do share, subscribe, and give us some feedback on this podcast. Thanks very much. Bye for now.